You have to admit, you've never thought of that before, right? Somebody's going, that's an idea, ice cream on the back of an elephant. Well, again, good morning. Good morning and welcome. My name is George Davis. As you can see, we're in this series entitled, This is Family. In the course of this series, we're really wrestling with the question, what does healthy family look like? How do we do family well? And the reality is, when it comes to family, one of the important things to talk about is just how we relate to one another, how we communicate. So with that in mind, how would you, how would you answer those kinds of questions? What was dinner conversation like for you when you grew up around the table? What does that conversation look like today? How is love expressed in your family? If we're going to talk about doing family well, I think we have to talk about communication. Understanding the importance of communication in family led to kind of an aha moment for me when I was a young dad. I think we had two small children at this time, and I was part of a men's group. And there were 12 guys in this group. And in the course of our year together as we met, one of the things we talked about was being fathers, being parents. And I remember one evening session where we were together and we went around the room and each of the guys talked about what their relationships with their parents was like. And for the majority of the guys in that circle, as we went around the room, I heard stories like this. I knew my dad loved me, but he never told me. And the aha moment for me as a young father, listening to these guys, many of whom were older than I was at this time, the aha moment was just paying attention to the fact that as we went around the room and multiple guys shared that kind of story, you could still hear the sadness, the regret, the sense of loss in their voice, even though, some of these guys were now in their 40s and 50s. And that experience just grabbed me. It kind of shook me as a young father. Oh my goodness! In fact, I remember thinking, I don't want my kids talking about me the way some of these guys are talking about their fathers, 40 years from now. And it was just this aha moment to realize communication is significant in our families. Communication has impact and sometimes lifelong impact, both positively and negatively. In our families. Now, my guess is I don't really have to take a lot of time to make that point. I think most of us know that. And some of you have experienced exactly what I'm talking about very deeply. So the question is, if communication really is important in our families, how do we do it well? How do we do this part of family well? And I think that issue is complicated just by the fact that regardless of how effective we are in our families, communication is still messy in a family context. Regardless of kind of the health of our families, there's still moments, right, when things are said in our families that are painful, that are hurtful. Because the reality is this, it's often our family members that see us at our worst, and we are often the people that see them at their worst. And in the midst of that, we say things and we interact in ways that just aren't healthy. So the truth is, communication is very important in families, but it's complicated. It's messy. And my guess is, for those of us who are parents, for those of us who are grandparents, when it gets to this part of family life, we often have a certain sense of regret. Of disappointment, of frustration. In fact, some of you, this is where you're at right now as parents. It's like, I just wish I could pound this truth into my kids and our conversations aren't going well. Or maybe you're at an earlier end of parenting and you feel like, all I do is discipline and discipline and discipline. Will I ever get out of this stage? Well, if as a parent or a grandparent you feel a certain frustration, disappointment, or even regret when it comes to communication, if it's any encouragement to you this morning, what I want to do is show you, I think the Bible really anticipates this. And in different ways, I think the Bible prepares us for this. I think the Bible really anticipates that, when it comes to family life and how we communicate, there's going to be some tension. That's going to be part of the story. So to communicate well, we need to learn how to handle this tension well. And to show you what I mean, I want to take you just to one statement in the New Testament. If you have a Bible, I want to take you to Ephesians chapter 6. So join with me in turning to Ephesians chapter 6. And really all I want to do this morning is kind of unpack one verse and think about some practical implications of it. So Ephesians chapter 6. And when we come to Ephesians chapter 6, I think we're going to see this tension that we will experience in our families when it comes to communication. So with that in mind, here's the verse. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, as we talk about this verse, let me just give you a couple of observations that are helpful in setting this verse in context. And one of the things I really think it's important to note is that in a first century Greco-Roman context, there are ways in which this verse really was countercultural. In fact, notice just the way the verse opens. Fathers, and interestingly in Greek, when this term is used in the plural, it can be implied fathers and mothers. So it's really, I think, addressing parents, fathers primarily, but parents in an applied application. So there's an address to parents in this verse. And this in and of itself is countercultural. It's countercultural for this reason. If you pay attention to the broader context in the book of Ephesians, you'll notice that Paul is addressing different kinds of relationships, particularly kinds of relationships that you would find in an ancient household. Husbands, wives, fathers or parents and children, slaves and masters. And in the ancient world, in different forms of literature, you would see these kinds of relationships addressed. In fact, this is sometimes referred to as a household code. It is giving guidance kind of on what a healthy household looks like and what the relationships need to look like. But in the ancient world, these relationships were rigidly hierarchical. You know, one party was an authority and one party was submissive. And consequently, typically in the ancient world, when you talked about these relationships, you only addressed the person that was lower on the food chain. So yes, you would talk about, you know, relationships between parents and children, but when you talk about that and when you gave instructions, the instructions would be aimed at the children, not the fathers, not the parents. And of course, you have that in Ephesians chapter 6, right? The opening part of chapter 6 is specifically addressed to children, but then you get to verse 4 and all of a sudden, fathers, parents are addressed as well. And that would have been kind of an aha moment in the ancient world because we were accustomed to giving responsibility and expectations to the children, not to the parents. Furthermore, what is countercultural about this verse is this. In the ancient world, Greco-Roman world, typically when you talked about educating children, your focus was on educating boys. That would have been the focus in the family. But notice in this passage, it's not fathers do not exasperate your boys, it's your children. And so once again, that to the ears of a first century listener, that would have been another little bit of a aha moment. So in different ways, this passage is countercultural when it talks about family in an ancient context. Now, at this point, I guess it's natural to say, of course, it's countercultural. Look, he's talking about bringing our kids up and the training and instruction of the Lord, and Christian families are to be different, and we're to do family differently, and it's supposed to go well, and it's supposed to always be in unity, and we're always supposed to get along, and we can set this ideal. It's so high because of our expectation of what Christian families are supposed to look like, And as we've already talked about in this series, there's no such thing as the ideal family. And interestingly, while the Apostle Paul is expecting our family relationships to be rooted in the gospel, rooted in the good news of Jesus Christ, I think this verse also expects a certain amount of tension in family relationships and how we communicate. And so really the challenge is, how do we engage this tension, this messiness, well? And to show you the tension in the verse, just think about the two halves of the verse. First of all, notice there is this idea. Fathers, right, do not exasperate your children. Do not provoke your children to anger. Do not irritate them, right? There's a related verse in Colossians chapter 3. Fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. So do not provoke, do not agitate, do not embitter. Which means you need to love, you need to build into it. Your kids need to know they're unconditionally loved, and we get that. So that's the first half of the verse. But notice the second half of the verse, it's all about, right, training and developing and instructing. And this implies that we're equipping our kids and we're building into them and also encouraging responsibility. And at times it includes discipline. Now, can I suggest to you the tension that we often feel in parenting is trying to pull both halves of this verse together and taking both of these seriously. I want to build into my kids. I want my kids to know that I am for them and they are unconditionally loved. And I want them to know how deeply I am, you know, seeking their best. But in doing that, I also want to build into them in such a way that they're learning. And at times that includes discipline and confrontation and hard conversations. And the question is, how do these two halves of this expectation go together? For instance, suppose I've got a five-year-old. Right? We're over at some friend's house for dinner, and you know, they've graciously made cookies. They know the kids like cookies. And so here my five-year-old is after dinner, and he's now pounding down the fourth cookie. Right? And I intuitively know what more sugar is going to do in his little body. And I intuitively know sometimes he just eats to eat and it's not good. And so, you know what? That's enough. Now, some of you have been there when you have said no, and it's not in any way related to the tone in your voice or the look on your face, but you have been there when there has been what? A meltdown, right? And you've been there, and it's like, oh, my goodness. And notice what I'm doing. I am building into my child, and, you know, I'm helping him kind of learn some self-control and that, but at this point, how does my son feel? He is exasperated. And irritated. Or flip the equation. I'm in a grocery store, same five-year-old. I have to confess, before we had kids, I used to look down on parents who would go into their grocery stores and buy their kids treats to keep them quiet. We had kids, we were in Fargo, North Dakota, and we loved to shop at this one grocery store because they gave kids free cookies. We would go into that grocery store. That is exactly where we headed to. Because one cookie would buy you at least 15 good minutes, right, of shopping. Now, notice in this equation, I am, right, my kid knows, oh, this is exciting. It's fun to go shopping, and it's great, and they're going to be quiet and cooperative, and they're feeling love. But this isn't necessarily the best training pattern, right, long term. Because in essence, whether they realize it or not, to some degree, I'm telling them, you know what, you really can't control the family through your displeasure. And so the tension is, how do I bring this together, right? How do I bring together the whole idea of, I want you to feel, I want to build into you, and I want to come alongside and encourage, and I want you to feel loved unconditionally as rooted in the gospel. But also, there's going to be training and learning, and at times we're going to have hard conversations, and there's going to be discipline. The tension is pulling those two together. And can I just, for those of us who are parents or grandparents, we need to recognize that sometimes, given this reality, that this is going to be our experience, given this reality, the easiest thing to do is try to relieve the tension and then go in one direction or the other. And you see parents do that. And I get it. You know, it's understandable. We relieve the tension. I'm just going to be for my kids, but I'm going to avoid having hard conversations. And tragically, you see some parents, it feels like they reach a point in their home where the kids really, you know, they are really dictating what's going on. Or at the other end, you see parents, you know, you've got to take charge, and they become rigid disciplinarians, and the older their kids get, the more willing they are to engage with harshness because the kids have to know the rules, but in the midst of being intentional about the rules and rule-keeping, they're not building into the relationship. And tragically, sometimes you see parents and kids that just disengage for that reason. And sometimes that lasts decades. And so the question is, how do I pull this together? How do I, instead of just trying to easily resolve this tension, how do I engage it well? Because I think in engaging it well, we are learning to communicate well. And so with that in mind, what I want to share with you are just three simple observations, three dimensions of healthy communication that I think enable us and help us engage the situation that we're going to experience in communicating as parents. Now, I just three simple observations and maybe just a few examples, even from my own life, just things Rose and I have learned through, you know, through other people, through our own mistakes. But I think these are three dimensions to healthy communication that are going to enable us to really embrace this tension without being overwhelmed by it or simply defaulting to one side of the equation. So the three dimensions that I just want to talk about briefly of healthy communication in families are these: connecting, equipping, and correcting. If I, as a parent, am going to be kind of healthy engaging our kids and in kind of seeking both to build into them relationally as well as to kind of instruct and train and help them grow up well, even through discipline and at times having to confront them, if I'm going to pull all that together, I think these three are foundational elements that need to be at work in my communication with my kids. First, there's this idea of connecting, and it's the idea of building into our relationship. And one of the challenges that I've wrestled with, to be honest with you, as a dad from time to time, is I've wrestled with the reality that there's a difference between communicating for information and communicating for intimacy. And sometimes just in the busyness of life or the whatever season I'm in or just being distracted by other things, I have settled simply in our family relationships for communicating for information, right? I mean, when the kids were older, you know, you just give, you know, it's, you come home, make sure they get ready for bed, okay, and maybe you read to them, maybe you don't, but there's a certain amount of communication, but it really defaults back to just make sure the information that needs to go back and forth goes back and forth. As they get older, maybe we talk more about, well, let's make sure you get your homework done, and how are you doing with this, and did you get that project done? And then, you know, as our kids have gotten older, more independent, what's your schedule, when do you have to be at work, and, you know, and all of that information communication is important, but there's a difference between communicating just for information and communicating for intimacy. And as parents, we've got to go after that, because it makes such a difference. You know, as I've gotten kind of feedback from different people about their own just family stories. I mean, you know, one description of a family went like this. I grew up in a family where my dad had a wonderful reputation in church and in the community for serving. I wish I had known that man in my own home. And you know, you hear that and it's like, oh my goodness, where was the connection? Where was the connection in that family? And there's a difference in our family interaction, just communicating information, but connecting in a way that fosters intimacy. And this is so important, because here's the deal. In your family, if the breadth of your rules surpasses the depth of your relationship, you're going to create frustration in your kids. If the breadth of your rules surpasses the depth of your relationship, you're just going to create frustration in your kids. And when I think about connecting and what that looks like, over the years, I keep coming back to maybe two issues. Issues at times I've done well with, issues at times I haven't. And one of the issues is simply this. You know, to move beyond just the information, the question is, how am I doing at understanding my kids? How am I doing at understanding my kids? So for instance, if you're a parent, and particularly if you've got kids at home right now, so what are your kids passionate about? What energizes them? Who's their hero? Right now, what's their biggest fear? What do they really enjoy doing? So when I think about understanding my kids, right, that's just getting beyond just the information I need to know about calendar stuff. That's trying to get at what's really going on inside. And this is just an important part of connecting. As I said, you know, at times I've done this well. At other times I realized I just missed it completely and paying attention to some things going on in our son's lives. Now, I realize at different stages how you kind of connect with your kids and understanding what's going on that's going to look differently. There's no magic formula. I know in our case, as our kids have gotten older, sometimes it's just hard to have those communication conversations, right? Not necessarily open about talking. I will say this. One of the things we found in connecting with our kids and trying to understand our sons is the significance of food. Three young men. Food is often the key. So, no, we you know, for us, this is one of the reasons we value going out to eat as a family. Because here we are in a booth, we're kind of forced to be together sometimes, but we can have conversation. And sometimes the conversation around the table is just pretty casual. Other times it can get interesting. The joke in our family is we pay our sons to have conversation. And this is, you know, and so this has been part of our story. Another family tradition that I found helpful is something we affectionately refer to as a sheets run. I love sheets, made to order food. And so, on a regular basis, but not on a set time, I'll look at, you know, whatever son's home or while they're here, you know, when they're home from college, hey, you want to make a sheets run? And so we'll head to sheets and, you know, over a bucket of fries and something somehow referred to as chicken that comes in a square. We'll just have a conversation. And sometimes those aren't, you know, deep or meaningful, but they're, you know, sometimes it's, so how's this going? Or what are you thinking about? Or how did this work out for you? You know, we talked recently about, and sometimes it, and you know, and once again, I just acknowledge, at times I don't do this well, really, but the goal is, how do I move beyond just exchanging information to building the depth of relationship and really understanding what's going on in my son's lives? And so how are you doing at understanding your kids? That's kind of a connecting question. Another connecting question that I found helpful is how am I doing at entering their world? How am I doing at entering their world? For me, one of the most humbling lessons of parenting is coming to grips with, you know what, my sons aren't necessarily interested in the things I'm interested in. And at times, it has been easy for me to look at them with a dismissive attitude because, you know, surely the things I'm interested in as a pastor are more important than what you're interested in. And I've had to grow in this area. But I've come to understand one of the ways I connect with our sons is by entering into their world. And that's looked differently at different stages. Sometimes it's just being there. It's being, you know, for me, I always enjoyed being the loudest voice on the sidelines or the loudest voice in the bleachers just so I could have a conversation with my son that said, did you hear me during that? Yes, Dad, I did. Please don't do that again. Yes, I have, right? I have connected. I want you to know I am for you. In fact, one of the running jokes in our family, I will look at my sons and I annoy them with this question now. Who loves you? Who loves you? Who loves you? They got tired of it, so finally they started answering, the dog. Thank you. That's right, the dog loves you. But what are ways in which I can engage those things in which my sons are interested? Because one of the things I've discovered over time is they've developed different interests and hobbies and different passions. As I enter into that, it allows us to connect. And there have been moments in conversation where when I genuinely express interest and just ask questions about this musical group or this, you know, this new piece of software or this new way to solder circuits. And when I engage that, I can just see something in the lives of my sons just through their eyes, just light up because we're connecting. So an important part of healthy communication is connecting. Secondly, there's this piece of equipping. Remember, the second part of Ephesians 6:4 talks in these terms: bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So, even as there's a connecting piece that's part of our relationship, part of our communication, there also needs to be an equipping piece. And once again, I think of this in two dimensions. I mean, as we've gone through, as I look back on our journey as parents and just in the life, watching the lives of other people and what their families look like, I would argue that this equipping piece really takes place in two ways. First of all, they're routine moments that are part of the rhythm of family. But secondly, they're spontaneous moments. Right? So first of all, they're routine moments like, you know, conversations we can be intentional in having around the dinner table. Or maybe, you know, family devotions are part of your family. Or, you know, bedtime and drive time opportunities. And these moments become kind of regular dimensions of our family that can be opportunities just for conversation. Opportunities also to talk about ways in which faith intersects life. And that's just really at the heart of the equipping, right? How do we help our kids understand the intersection between faith and life? I think part of those rhythms even include how you engage church. And some of you, your parents with kids at home, and let me just encourage you, you know, this is what we want to do as a church family with you. We want to partner with you as your kids are involved in Kids Step or in CORE. We want to partner with you. And one of the ways I think you can engage that well is just paying attention to what our kids are talking about or learning in these different environments and even having conversations about that. Of course, sometimes it gets interesting. I still remember when our kids were younger, one Sunday going home, and we would, you know, we typically talk about, well, what was the Bible story like? What did you learn? And anything interesting in Sunday school? And I remember having that conversation with one of our sons, and I go, so what was the Bible story about today? And he very, very confidently replied from the back of the minivan, it was about John the Baptist. We were a very ecumenical church then, so. And so I think it's important for those of us who are in families to figure out for us as a family, and you know, there's no perfect blueprint here, but what are the routines in your family life that can help you create opportunities just to build into your kids in an intentional way? Routines that can help you, you know, foster interaction and conversation, discussion about the ways faith, scripture intersects daily life. What does that look like? And it's not going to look the same for every family. It's not going to look the same in each life stage. I know, for instance, just for us, a couple of other things that we've done that I think have been beneficial with each of our sons as they've gotten in high school. There have been times in high school where we've been getting together with other families of guys of the same age and just talking about life. So right now we're gathering on a regular basis with other families who have sophomore guys, and we hang out together. And it's an opportunity in an intentional way for the parents to build into the lives of their sons. When each of our older sons became seniors in high school, they had the first period off during their senior year. So we would go out to breakfast once a week, and I developed this list of questions, the things I kind of wanted to talk with them about during their senior year. And so I gave that to them, and each week we'd just take a question. Sometimes it was profound conversation. A lot of times it wasn't, but it was an opportunity for equipping and building into. And so I think for those of us who are parents, we need to figure out what routines work for our family that can just further foster conversation about, you know, what you're learning and passing on to your kids, or ways in which we can build into our kids in meaningful ways. I would also just say for those of you who are grandparents, I think you can start routines as well. When my parents, who live in another part of the country, visit, one of their routines is to take each of their grandsons out during every visit for a meal. And this has become a great family tradition for my parents to build into their grandsons. My parents have five grandsons, and they're very intentional in how they pray for the grandsons. So each of them gets one of the 5 days of the work week. And you know, that's the focus of my parents' prayer for that day. And the five grandsons know that, you know, they've got a particular day of the week when their grandparents are going to be praying for them. And it's fostered conversation between generations. How can we pray for you? And what's going on here? And it's just been part of a routine that is part of an equipping process. So I think we need to just be open to what are the routines you can build into your life as a parent that just help foster that conversation. But having said that, and this is another thing that's just been hard for me to learn and to come to grips with, the reality is, you know, a lot of times those those routine conversations are routine. But then there are these moments. And I don't fully understand it. I can't always predict it. But there are these moments, these spontaneous moments in our families at times where it's like a window opens up. And all of a sudden, for some reason, you're able to talk about something you haven't been able to talk about. You're able for a conversation to go where it needed to go, but it hasn't been able to go. And I think as parents, as grandparents, we need to be open to that. Some of you feel stuck in relationships, and maybe that's what you need to pray for. You need to pray for a window at some point to open up where we can engage this with our kids. In previous conversations, it always feels like I'm nagging or I'm pushing or I can't break through. But then every now and then there's this moment where the window opens up, and I've got to be ready to engage that. And to be honest with you, as a dad, sometimes that has been hard for me because they don't always come at the most opportune times. We now have two sons in college, and one of the things you know about if you're in college or you've been in college recently is the college sleep schedule is very different than normal humanity, right? As one of my sons has told me. But Dad, remember, if I went to bed at a normal time, I would miss out on so much of the college experience that you are paying for. How do you respond to that? But what that means is maybe once or twice a semester, I'll get a call like 11:30 or midnight. And it always starts the same way. Dad, did I wake you? Yes, you did. And to be honest with you, I have to tell you, the first time I got one of these calls, I was furious. How disrespectful of my son to wake me up. I think I had, you know, at one time it was a Saturday night, and doesn't he know I'm preaching three times the next day? But I really, you know, God kind of had to do a work in my heart on this to say, wait a minute. A window just opened. You need to engage it. So I've learned to think differently when those calls come at crazy times during the night. So that now the conversation can go something like this. Well, yeah, you did wake me up, but that's okay. What do you want to talk about? What's up? And we've got to be open to those spontaneous moments. And some of you, as I said, some of you are in relationships where that's what you need to pray for. So connecting, equipping, and correcting. And really the only thing I'll say about correcting and discipline in terms of how we communicate is this. I think for the correcting piece, the discipline piece to really go well, the other two pieces need to be in place. And sometimes where I've seen parents really get into trouble is we, you know, maybe as our kids get older, it feels like they're drifting away or they're getting into other things. And we really feel like now we've got to clamp down on the discipline, and we do that. But the other pieces aren't being developed as well. And that's often a recipe for disaster. So in engaging this tension, and embracing this tension that can come in family communication, this tension of building into them and wanting them to know they're unconditionally loved and being for them, but also training and developing and disciplining, embracing that well. These dimensions of communication need to be in place. So if you're a parent or grandparent, how are you doing? Now, in saying that, I realize this. I think for most of us who are parents, it's so easy just to embrace this or hear this with a certain sense of regret. I have yet to meet a parent who looks back on their parenting and says, if I had it to do over again, I would do it exactly the same. I think in so many cases, it's just so natural to say, well, if I had it to do over again, there are certain things I would do differently. And if even as we've been talking about this morning, that has been your thought, can I challenge you to this way of thinking? Can I challenge you that I think part of what you're experiencing is just the work of God's grace? Because the reality is this, if I look back and say, you know, 20 years ago I would have done it exactly the same, then what that says is I haven't really been growing during those 20 years. And so I realize this can be demotivating to talk about these elements, because for some of us, we're kind of past the stage of having our kids in our home, and maybe it feels like the opportunity to do certain parts of this communication is gone. For others of us, maybe we feel stuck and we're not really sure how well we can develop these skills. But can I just challenge you, as I pull this to a close, to remember that the end of this verse in Ephesians 6 is talking about the fact that this is to be done of the Lord. And I think that refers not simply to the content of our teaching, right? We are to raise our kids in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It's not simply the content of our teaching. It's also the context of our relationships. All of what we've been talking about needs to be done in the context of the transforming grace of God that is at the root of the gospel. And so if after we've been talking about this, all you feel is my window of opportunity has been closed because my kids are grown and, you know, this is all behind me now. Would you be willing to just embrace the gospel again this morning and say, God, give me the ability where I am right now in moving forward to handle these relationships well? And I realize for some of you, those relationships are strained. And the reality may be for some of you, part of embracing this well is being willing to apologize and actually have that conversation with your kids or your grown kids. For others of us, we're still in the midst of it. I think the challenge is to recognize, okay, God, right where I am right now, by your grace, can you continue to help me grow in these areas of communicating well? May I not run from this tension, but may I see this as a place where your truth, your spirit, your gospel can be at work. With that in mind, would you join me in prayer? Gracious God, again this morning as we talked about family and the reality of communication, I think all of us know the power of communication in families, both the positives as well as the negatives. And Father, the truth is in families there's going to be this tension when it comes to communication, and we've got to be willing to embrace that. But Father, may we be willing to do it well. And I pray for those of us who are in the thick of it right now, that we just be encouraged this day, that in the midst of this tension and what we experience in our families, that you can be at work right there. Father, I pray for those of us maybe who are a little farther along in life's journey, and maybe we're looking back with a certain sense of regret, but would you help us see how we can move forward well, regardless of what the past looks like. So, Father, we acknowledge the messiness and the difficulty and the challenge. But we also acknowledge this is a place where you can be at work. In Jesus' name, amen.